is Parsha Shoftim. So again, nothing to do with what we're doing in the Chumash, right? It doesn't have to work out. Shoftim means judges. Exactly. So it's exactly the same topic to do with the Parsha as to do with the Chumash that we're learning. Again, like how random, but nothing's random, as we know. So we'll see some beautiful things. It's based on our Parsha, but still, which will connect to this week's Parsha. And I think they're very, very beautiful insights. And we're going to see first, I just want to read just a few of the psukim very, very quickly to see the overview of the topic. Then we're going to see in depth some beautiful layers. First of all, we're going to see a little bit about how Judaism, the way Yiddishkeit views judges, the relationship between the judge and the litigant and how he treats them. So that's just fascinating, just fascinating things. But even more than that, how it really is relevant to our own individual daily life, which hopefully we would think not, because hopefully we don't go to, you know, to have any, we don't want any litigation. Nevertheless, we'll see that this is something which is applicable for each and every one of us as an individual, and we're going to see how. So just before, as I say, just before we, so if you look at, let me just see what page it is in your booklet. There you, again, you do have two booklets. One of them is the Chumash. So page 9, if you turn to page 9 in that booklet that has the black on it, you know, the Chumash booklet. And I'll just read, just, we read these psukim, I just want to very quickly see something Moshe Rabbeinu is in this, on page 9 is saying, I said to you at that time, saying, Va'omer aleichem be'esehi leimer, lo'i uchal levadi, right? I cannot carry you alone. And we mentioned because the Jewish people, last week we went in depth, because the Jewish people, it's not only that there were so many of them in quantity, it was more the quality, right? It was more the fact that they were so valuable, so important, and therefore, if you make any mistake in any type of litigation, God forbid, it's not just that you're making a mistake to just an ordinary person who's here and it's a temporary mistake. Rather, as we said, the Jewish people are eternal. Every Jew has an eternity to him. Every Jew is so valuable. So it makes it so much more the responsibility on the judge, just much heavier. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was implying here. And that's why he said, if we go on page 10, we're just going to quickly, I'll read these in English because we've read these psukim and then we're going to come to verse 11. Your God has increased you, and behold, you are today, as we mentioned last week, like the stars of the heavens in abundance. And then he gave them a bracha, may Hashem, your God, the God of your forefathers, add to you 1,000. As we say on page 11, times yourselves and bless you as he has spoken of you. And then we mentioned, and I say these are quickly because we're coming to the psukim we're going to deal with, in Pasuk Yud Beis, how can I alone carry your burden, right? We said, Eicha Esel Levadi, and we mentioned the burden was the burden of judging them, of litigating, and your quarrels. So because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu said, and this is what we're going to be concentrating, this is on page 13, and it's, I think, not page 13, it's Pasuk Yud Gimel, I don't know what page, 12, page 12, it says, Havu lachem anoshim, so provide for yourselves men, univainim, and now he says, what kind of men? Chachamim, men who are wise, nivainim, who are understanding, v'yiduin l'shifteichem, and known to your tribes. We'll see every word is exact. Those are the people that you can appoint. What will they do, those people who have to be wise? They have to be understanding. They have to be well known. What will they do? So if you go on to page 13, it says, v'asimein v'rasheichem, and I shall appoint them as your heads. And then Moshe Rabbeinu is, as we said, he's speaking to them about these things that had happened in the past. So he says, you answered me, right? And v'taimru, when I made this proposition, so to speak, I suggested this. What was your response? So you said, toiv hadavar asher dibarta lasais, the thing that you have proposed to do is good. That's how the Jewish people responded to this suggestion. Okay, so we see a few details here that we're going to go into, and I just want to see one more pasuk. No, that's all for the pasukim for now. You don't have in front of you, I'll just read you in English, because he continues and he says, so therefore what happened was, because of that, because you agreed, so Moshe Rabbeinu says, he continues, I'm sorry, you don't have this, I'll just, as I say, read you, so I took the heads of your tribes, distinguished men who were wise and well-known, and I appointed them as heads over you, leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, leaders of fifties, and leaders of tens, and officers for your tribes. As we know, he made a whole system of judges, and you... depending on what the situation, what the litigation was about, you would go to a certain level of judge. Obviously, the ones who were of a higher, like just like we have now, you know, the regular courts, and then you go to a higher court, then you go to the Supreme Court, and, you know, that kind of idea. And you would go and you would find the answers so that people shouldn't have any, God forbid, quarrels. People should be able to get along. And then he said, it's like this, just two more important psukim. He says, I instructed your judges at that time, saying, listen among your brethren and judge righteously. This is an important thing, Moshe Rabbeinu said, to judge righteous, and I just want to read you what he says. Shamaya ben achechem, listen amongst your brothers. Ushefatetem b'tzedek, judge righteously. Bein ish ubein achiv, between one man and between his brother. Ubein geirai, and between the litigant, so to speak. And then he gives two interesting halachas. He says, loy sakiru panin b'mishpat, you shall not show favoritism in judgment. Very important, obviously. Bein ish, kakatan kagadol tishma'un, like small, like big, alike you shall hear. So in other words, obviously you don't treat anybody more important or less important. If they're coming before you, doesn't matter who it is, whether he's the president of I don't know what, and the little shlamazel off down the street, you've got to treat them equally. But then he says something interesting. He says, very interesting halacha, loy saguru mipnei ish bein ki hamishpat lelei kimu. Do not be afraid. This is a fascinating halacha. So the judge shouldn't be afraid in front of any of the litigants. And this is something that we find a lot now. If somebody, it's not even a matter of strength. We're talking about if somebody has political clout, or if somebody is, you know, very, very important and has influence, people are afraid to insult them, to hurt them, and therefore they do judge more favorably to them just because they don't know what that person's going to do, whether to them, to their family, the ramifications. We see this all the time. This is the sad thing that we see, that's why there isn't fairness in judgment, generally speaking. And here Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's not the way we work. And then he says, because why? Because we know, because the judgment belongs to God. V'hadavar asher yikshem mikem, tikruvun elai ushmativ. And then he gives them one other halacha, and he says, any matter that is too difficult for you, you shall bring to me, and I shall hear it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu commanded them. Okay, interesting, a few little details, but we have to understand what this all means, so to speak, as far as what we can learn from it. But before we get to what we actually learn, as I say, I just want to do one or two Rashis here, even just orally, and then I want to go into some of the beautiful commentaries. So he says like this. Okay, so we mentioned how Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't judge them on their own, and how they were difficult to judge, as he says. Tarchechem, he used the word that I could not carry your trouble, because he said the Jewish people were troublesome. If one of them would see his adversary winning the case, he would say, I have witnesses to bring, I have proofs to bring, I'm adding judges. We haven't changed. We're not easy. We are not an easy nation, in a sense. That's why maybe you might say we don't get along so well. We have strong opinions. Perhaps that's why we're still here, part of the reason. I mean, obviously we're here because Hashem is protecting us. But we have that inner strength. We have that extra way of thinking, you know, a little bit, sometimes a little bit crooked, but we are not easy to judge. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu, that's true. Therefore, he says, very interesting thing, umaschem, and your burden. He says, this teaches us that they were, and that Rashi uses an interesting language, heretics. What does heretics mean? It says that, this is also how they treat their judges, but Moshe Rabbeinu said about himself at the beginning, he was the only judge. What would they do? It says, if Moshe Rabbeinu left his home early to judge the people, what would they say? They would say, what did the son of Amram see that led him to leave? Perhaps it's not calm in his house, right? Maybe he's having trouble at home and he's running away. He wants to leave early. When he left late, like if he came out late, they said maybe he's at home figuring out all kinds of things against us. So whatever he did, they found fault. Again, that hasn't changed. We tend to be quite judgmental of our leaders, and that's why it's very difficult for somebody. Nobody wants to be the judge. Nobody wants to be the leader, because it's quite, we are quite critical in that way. Okay, anyways, but the bottom line is, Moshe Rabbeinu said, this is what I suggested, and you took it up. You said, okay, and I found. Now, I just want to show you one more thing, because he describes the kind of people that we're going to judge, that fit the criteria to be judges. So he said, Anoshim. Anoshim, what does men mean? So he says, in those days, obviously, women were not judges. So why do we specify the word Anoshim? So he says, Anoshim means tzaddikim. Okay, so now you think, of course they have to be tzaddikim, obviously. But no, if you look at what is the role of a judge? The role of a judge is to be highly intelligent and to be able to know the law and to be able to apply the law. What does righteousness have to do with it? So we say the reason that righteousness has to do with it, obviously, is because if they're not righteous, they will be influenced and they might take bribes and they might even allow themselves to be swayed in one way or another. So righteousness is extremely important. And righteousness here means the concept of being God-fearing. So they do it because they know what's right and they stick to what's right. That's the first criteria. But then they say that they have to also be, as we said, wise, chachamim. What is wise? What's the difference between chachamim and nevinim? Wise and understanding. What's the difference? It's interesting. What's wise and what's understanding? So he said, fascinating. Rashi gives an interesting example. So he says like this, that what's the difference between wise and understanding? So he actually brings from a Gemara. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi answered, one who is wise is like a rich money changer. When they bring him money to examine, he examines. And when they don't bring him money, he sits and wonders. He bides his time. What is somebody who is understanding? He's like an enterprising money changer. When they bring him money to examine, he examines. And when they do not bring him money to examine, he goes about and brings in business on his own, which means in this context that he takes initiative. So somebody who's understanding, this is interesting because you wouldn't necessarily relate that to this, but it means that he doesn't just take things, first of all, at face value. And when he sees two litigants in front of him, he looks at the case extremely carefully, and he doesn't just listen to what they're saying, right? But he hears much deeper than that. He tries to really uncover and understand the entire situation. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, also, when you're talking about somebody who's looking, it means also somebody who really cares. So a judge can sit in his little room and wait for people to come, you know? And nobody comes, fine, fantastic. But here we're talking about people who care, and they want that there should be peace in the nation, that people should be getting along, that people should be able to discuss things, and therefore, they might even make it their business to find out, does somebody need something? Should somebody be coming? So it's somebody who actually cares. But it's caring more, really the simple way to understand it is that there's somebody who can take information and just spit back information, or somebody who can actually decipher and sift and really deeply understand. And that's what the second category, and that's a very important part of being a judge, is somebody who can really sift through and differentiate and understand properly. Obviously, you can't judge properly otherwise. And the other thing also, we mentioned, what was the other criteria? V'yiduyim l'shifteichem. This is fascinating. Why does it have to be somebody known? Why does it matter? Can't it just be some very unknown character that comes to be the judge? So Moshe Rabbeinu says an interesting thing. When I was choosing, you know, these people to lead you, he says, I might not know everybody, right? And if a person comes to me and he puts on certain clothing and, you know, looks a certain way, I might assume that this is what he is. Like, he looks righteous, he looks intelligent, I might assume, but I don't know. So if it's known to the tribes, it means that people know what he is. And that's what we need. We need people that really fit into this category. And this is the idea known to the tribes. What that really means for us nowadays, actually, when we would talk about a judge, is that a judge has to be somebody that people will trust. That's what it means, they're known. They're known, they have a reputation, and they have a good reputation. And that's a very important part. Okay, so that's how much, that's just on the simple level.
Their own money.
Yeah. So they don't take bribes. I know.
They don't take bribes.
Exactly.
I thought that was from the
community. Yeah, so it is, but because it's a very good one. So I'll tell you the truth like this. There's a few places that talks about the judges. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu is just telling them over in brief. in Parshas Mishpatim, right? That's where it says in more detail, and in Parshas Shoftim, this week's Parsha. So yes, 100%, Sylvia. There are in the Chumash, and then there's many halachas in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, and then in Shulchan Aruch, which has details about the judging.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully. You know, it's interesting because some people will say otherwise. Some people will say that people who are wealthy, perhaps money matters to them, and that's even more scary. And some people don't care about money so much, so then you can trust more. But it's an interesting thing, but it does. It's the best, at least the person, if not wealthy, at least they should have enough, so to speak, in a way where they won't be tempted. Yeah, it's very interesting. Fascinating thing. Because bribery, in terms, as we know, bribery is a big thing. Obviously, we know that generally. And that definitely sways judgment. There's a famous thing, it says that some people might say, oh, I'm going to take a bribe, but I'll still judge correctly. And that never happens. And we also say interesting thing that with bribery, remember we learned this then, that there are so many things that constitute bribes. Like even, remember, there's a beautiful story in the Gemara where there was one of the Tanaim, he actually wasn't so wealthy, but a litigant who knew that he was going to be on this great tzaddik was going to be the one judging today. So on his way to the courts, he brought over a bushel of fruits, whatever, a basket of fruits. He didn't even know that this guy was going to, anyways. So he drops off the fruits, and then when they get to the court, so the guy says, I can't, have to recluse myself now because you brought over the fruits. So now I'm swayed, you know. So it's a very interesting, that's the, you know, the correct way, so to speak. But life is complicated, as we know, and yes. So anyways, let's see. Okay, so now I want to just go on to understand something on your next sheet. So now if you look at your, we're going to do some inside and some orally, look at your other booklet, and here, this will see some beautiful ideas. First of all, before we go into the details, this is from the Nesivas Shovim, and he explains beautifully, as we just said, this concept of how it relates to us. This is not just judges in a global sense, litigants and judges are based in. We're talking about for me and you just as individuals. So he says a fascinating thing. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, this is on page 2 in your booklet. Moshe Rabbeinu says, at that time, lo uchal levad, you're right, I cannot carry you alone. And therefore choose, as we mentioned, anoshim. So what kind of men? Chachamim, nevoinim, v'yeduim, right? So men who are wise, men who are in understanding, and men who are known to your tribes. And he says like this, an interesting thing. He says an interesting question that many of the commentaries ask. They say, why does Moshe Rabbeinu choose to talk about this right at the beginning of his long speech? Why is this so important to set the tone for the whole Chumash Devarim? Okay, it's one of the many things that happened, it's true, but it's just one of the many things. So he says, because this is actually one of the big foundations of a Jew's life. And what does that mean, a foundation? So he says a beautiful thing. And he says, I'll show you on the second paragraph. It says, Mitzvahs minui ha-shayftim, this mitzvah of appointing judges, is very specific to every single Jew because we are all judges. Okay, so we're not just talking that we will go to a judge, but we are all judges. So all the halachas that apply to a judge, we have to apply to ourselves as well. What does that mean, we are all judges? Because we're told not to judge. That's a very big thing, right? Don't judge another. Whom are we, yes, meant to judge? Ourself, exactly. And this is really connected to the month of Elul, right? That's what we're talking, really. Elul is a big time of judgment, meaning self-judgment. And that we are meant to be. We are meant to constantly be judging. And he says that Yehudi yedayin v'shoifet al atzmai, he has to be a judge on himself. And that's what we're talking about. Now, so what does this mean? What are all these details? So he says like this. How can we judge ourselves? So first of all, we have to know the criteria that you have to have be chachamim, nevoinim, and yiduim. And if you look at those words, they actually are similar to chachma, bina, and das, which are the three words that make up, generally, intelligence, if you want to say, the concept of rationale, but they can be broken up into, what is chachma? He says chachma is the understanding in the mind, the wisdom in the mind. Bina is the understanding of the heart. And das is when you combine both of them. Now, if we want to look in the mirror and make an assessment and make an accounting and judge ourselves, we have to use our mind, extremely important. First of all, we have to be aware of what we are, what we're doing, you know, what we're up to, where we need improvement, also our strengths. We have to be aware of it in our mind. But that's not enough. We also have to be in touch with our emotional part, meaning to say, we have to understand how that's affecting us emotionally and where we are at in our feelings, how it's affecting us, how it translates actually in us, right? Because a person, very interesting, a person in their mind can actually be very healthy many times. Like they know what's right and really want to do what's right. But that doesn't mean that's where you are, as we know. So it's not just practically in action, but even in our feelings, we can be resenting it, we can be pulling away from it. So a person has to be in tune with that as well. And then you have to combine both. So you have to be able to have the healthy in the mind, healthy in the emotions, and therefore be able to apply it properly. And he says, once a person is aware of that, then we can start with our service, anything, doing anything, as we said, being a successful person in any way and in any form of growth and coming close to Hashem or anything that a person might want to do. And he brings a very interesting example, and he says that, okay, put aside the example for a minute. I just want to show you something very nice he says about the Pesukim. He says, that's why it also says, Havu lachem anashim. He asks an interesting question. Why, in this case, did Moshe Rabbeinu said it before the people? Remember, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu got a response from the people. They said, yeah, it's a good idea. Why did he even ask them? Most of the time, if you look into the Chumash, when Hashem commands something, right? Moshe Rabbeinu said, this is what Hashem commanded, and he does it. Why over here, when it came to this delegation of judges, does he consult with the people first? Right? Tell them a whole sob story, it's too much for me. And then he consults and he says, maybe this is a good idea. And then they say, yeah, it's a good idea. And then he does it. Why? Why this process?
Because it didn't come from Hashem, it came from his father-in-law.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing. Riva, that's a very good answer. So maybe that's true. Maybe what he could have done, though, imagine if Yisrael gave Moshe that idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, had a very good private line with God. He could have gone into his office and called God and said, is this a good idea? And then done it. So you're right, it didn't come from God, but nevertheless, he didn't have to consult with the people. Like, what? You understand? It's such a strange thing. So the Nesiv HaShalom says, no, this is such an important part, because this really is how it works. With us, this is not just coming as a command from God. We have to take the initiative. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is showing us with this halacha. If we want to grow, it doesn't matter how many people outside of you are going to tell you, you know, you make this mistake all the time. The more they tell you, the more your defenses go up, right? Or maybe you should change. Or maybe you should go speak to so-and-so because they can help you with it. No good. It has to come. As we know, change will only come when the person themselves wants to change. Yes, they can get advice afterwards, 100%, and they can get help, 100%. But you have to want to. It has to come from your initiative. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is showing them. That's why he consulted with them. Because he's showing them this idea of judges has to come from yourself. Once you make the first move, then, yeah, you can go for help and you can enlist and all the friends and all the support you want. But first, you have to make the move. And that really ties in, as we know, with the month of Elul, right? We say, Ani l'daidi, that's what it says, I am to my beloved, meaning the Jewish people have to make the first move. And then Hashem responds. So that's a very important part of a person's self-improvement, so to speak, a person's growth. Very important part. That's why he said it this way. Another thing, interesting, he says, I just want to show you one more thing. He says, Bechol Sha'arecha, right? Actually, in Parsha Shoftim, in this week's Parsha, it says that you should appoint judges in all of your gates. What's the idea of in all of your gates? Because, and we're going to see soon more in depth about that. I'm going to show you, because what happens with these judges? These judges, let me just see. First of all, you have to do the work yourself. Let me just see something. Another interesting thing we say is that, before we go further, just also, sometimes a person might think, yeah, I have to make the first initiative, first move. But even then, what we do find is a person like feels the lack. You know, they feel like they have to get better. They feel that this is really impacting their life. So they'll consult with somebody who they think is a specialist. So if it's in spiritual matters, they might go to a great rabbi. If it's in psychological matters, they'll go to a psychologist. But we know if you look around and you see what is one of the marks that make a difference to one person being successful in their change and one person not being successful. So one of the big things is that even when a person takes the initiative, he has to be willing to put in the work. If they're going to just totally rely on the specialist and say, okay, I've taken the initiative, now I've come, and now just put it all on them, it's also not going to work. It doesn't work. Nothing will change. And all the advice that you're going to get, all you're going to end up all that's going to happen is that this person is going to keep on sort of dumping all the issues that they have and unloading, but nothing will change. So the person has to be willing to not only take the initiative, but also put in a tremendous amount of effort themselves. And that's why there's a beautiful thing it says, there's a very nice Maimar Chazal that says, you know, when we talk about us changing, we always say, oh, it's too difficult. Like, it's true. A lot of times things seem insurmountable. So one of the ways we encourage is we say that Hashem tells us, open up the eye of a needle. Remember, Eftach Kechudai Shal Machat, the eye of a needle. And sometimes they explain it not just the eye, but like the point of the needle. And I will open up, Hashem says, like the entranceway to a hallway. In other words, you make the first little move, and then you will see that I will make it successful, and it will grow much more. So we say like this, why is the example given with the point of a needle? Because what is a needle? A needle is sharp. And what does a needle have to do? It has to, I mean, I don't want to use that example, but he says, like almost pierce your heart. It has to go deep inside of you. In other words, the person has to allow themselves to feel that discomfort and has to allow themselves to be vulnerable and has to allow themselves to open up. And then and only then will Hashem step in and help you increase your efforts, obviously. So this is a very important part, he says. And then he says, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't carry you alone. That's what he's saying. Because you have to carry yourself. And if you don't put in the effort, it's not going to be successful. And then, I just want to see one more other, and then he says, Shayftim v'shayftim titein l'cha, you shall put it singular, because every individual person has to make the move themselves. And then when it says sha'arim, and this, we're going to come back to it in a minute, but I'll just finish with this over here, sha'arim are gates. What are gates? Where do we put the judges? At all our gates. Remember, we've done this before. It's a fascinating thing. What does that mean for us as an individual? So in general, what it meant, and you know, in Israel, fascinating thing. There was a big court, like the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, which was on Temple Mount, right? That's where it was. It was there in Yerushalayim, 72 members of the Sanhedrin. But every single community of Jews had to have, if depending on the size of the community, had to have their own court. So some communities, if it was a big one, had to have a court of 23. Some, three were enough. Three, you know, judges were enough. Where would the judges sit? Where did the court find itself? Actually, by the gates. That's what it says. B'chol Shar. You know, in those days, there were gates outside cities, gates outside villages. And by the gate, you know, everybody knew, you know, by the entrance, so to speak, that's where the judges would sit. What are the gates in us, in ourselves? So there are a few ways of explaining it, but on a simple level, most of the ways that there's a very famous Torah scholar's name of the Shach, Shapsei Koyen. Anyway, it's interesting if you've heard of that story, the adopted princess. Whatever it was, he lived during, unfortunately, the time of Khmelnytsky, and it was a terrible time in history. And he lived through a very big massacre. But anyways, we still have some of his Torah. And he taught something beautiful. He says, what are the gates? So the gates are the two eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. That's how he puts the gates. That's every person's gates. What does that mean? Because that's where we, A, let things in, and also let things out. Okay, that's where things come in from and come out from. Okay, so we know the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. Interesting. With the eyes, fascinating thing, the eyes sometimes we look at like, that's something that we don't have so much control of, because how do we control what we see? If I just happen to be walking and I see something, well, I see it, right? It wasn't my fault. I didn't see it. Even hearing, right? I'm with a group of people and somebody starts a conversation, I'm not in control of what they're going to say, and I heard it. The one that we're the most in control of is our mouth, A, with even what we put in, because that we decide, and of course what comes out of our own mouth, that we are in control. Our nose, probably the least control, because the smells, they just go everywhere, right? And that just wafts around and we smell it. But fascinating thing with Torah, we still say that they are considered our gates, and we are still meant to put judges, which means that we are still considered, in a sense, responsible or in control of these gates. So on a simple level, as I'm just going to show you something else and come back to this. The reason we say that we are in control is because even when we see something that we shouldn't or hear something that we shouldn't, that's the first second. But what we do with it right afterwards, we are in control. It's a little hard, but let's just say you're sitting amongst friends and a certain topic of conversation comes up and it's not a positive one and it's something that we shouldn't be listening to, whether it be Lashon Hara or even just something very negative and very heavy and something that's going to put us in a terrible mood or whatever it may be, right? Or something that's not appropriate, whatever it may be, we are actually responsible to get up and move, like to leave, whatever. We're responsible to shut our ears somehow. And we are responsible, if we see something that we shouldn't see, to look away. It's an interesting thing. And nowadays, it's even more. I mean, nowadays, we can understand where this comes from, because we have, like, it's crazy. These gates are so much more important, because with the phone, what's happened is that we've brought the entire world into our lives, like in such a... It's unreal. It's like this. It's not like you close the door to your house and you're protected. There's no such thing anymore. So what we have to realize is, when we look at the internet and when we look at anything that anybody sends us, it's really up to us to keep looking. If we notice something that looks like, you know, maybe we shouldn't look, then we shouldn't, you know, we should scroll away. And it's our decision if we do that. Now, of course, the initial seeing also affects, but that's its own thing. But what we do with it is, if we keep looking. But I want to show you something else, and we're going to come back to this. I want to show you something beautiful. It says like this. Let's go to the next page, because this is page number 3, Arachaim. I want to show you some beauty. He goes through so many beautiful ideas, more technical with the psukim, and then we'll come back. Beautiful ideas coming back to the concept of judges as a judge. So, and this also, I found this Arachaim. So this is on page 3. I say always, like, Torah, it's, the Arachaim lived in the late 1600s. But what he wrote here could have been written in today's modern psychology books when it comes to relationships and communication, and it's unbelievable. I'll show you. So he says like this. He says, when the pasuk is very interesting. It says, at that time, it says, and you will, the judges will listen, right? They will hear what the litigants have to say. So he says like this, Ayid yisbar al derech masha amru b'sanhedrin, and the Rambam says in Hilchas Sanhedrin, Tzarech hadayin, first of all, the judge has to lishmaya hatainus, has to listen to all of the claims, mibale dinin, from the litigants, ulishanais ta'anais sehem, and to repeat what they've said. This is a fascinating thing. So somebody comes to you, and they say something like, I don't know, she took, whatever, she borrowed this and this, right? So what you're meant to do is say, did you just say she borrowed this and this? It's like nowadays with a lot of different therapies, they use this method of communication. They say when to show somebody that you're actually listening. You have that sometimes with parents and children, or like they say, we don't have communication. So one of the things they say is, how can you improve on the communication if you repeat what the other person just said? Sometimes it could be a bit annoying, but the other person knows that you heard what they said, right? Because you repeated it. And not only that, but you yourself have to be listening much better. It's true. And it also goes in much more. So you see that, that's what Aruch Chaim here says. The judge has to actually repeat what that litigant just says, repeat it back to clarify. To, okay, so this is what you just said, and this is what you mean, which is fascinating. And then he says, he has to actually verbally say it, not just know that he understands it, but verbally repeat it. And then he says, what's the idea of listen between your brothers? Why does he have to command about that? Obviously, if you're going to judge, you have to listen. You can't judge if you don't listen. You don't know what they're talking about even. You don't even know why they're there. So he says the idea is that, first of all, he says that if one of the litigants says, I have something else to add, you can never say to him, enough. You've spoken enough. You have to listen to every single detail to what they have to say. And even if in the middle and they come up and they say, oh, I remember something else, you have to have that patience and allow them to say it all. So that's what Shmaya means. Listen. Listen and let them talk. That's a very important thing. The other thing also is that it says a fascinating thing that sometimes, and this can happen when you're judging, it can become very overwhelming, like tiresome, especially when some people are very nitpicking. And after a while, you're sitting there and it's hours. And the two litigants just seem to have more and more and more, you know, and digging out more and more and more. And you say enough, but then you don't say enough because, you know, you're not allowed to say enough. But then their case is finished and there's somebody else waiting by the door. And they also need to be judged. So you might say, I'm just too tired, come back tomorrow. So the Aruch Chaim points out that according to Torah, there's a concept called Inui Hadin. Inui Hadin means when we delay or postpone the judgment. And postponing the judgment is painful for the people who are waiting, and you're not permitted to do that. Now, this is a fascinating thing because this is to do with judges. But if we think about it with our own relationship, so to speak, with our own interactions with people. Many times, so of course, if a person's extremely tired, sometimes it's not the best time, you know, because you might respond wrong. However, we have to be so careful from postponing. If somebody has something urgent to tell us that's really on their heart, we have to be careful because it can actually cause the person pain, real emotional pain. Waiting when you need to say something, when you need to be heard, is painful. And that's what he's saying here also. And that's what Inu Hadin is. Do not cause pain by postponing your listening and your judgment. That's another important halacha. And then he says something else interesting also, that, you have to listen, fascinating, that when you listen, it should be the language that you speak. It's better not with an interpreter. This is also fascinating. We find that even with us, you know, if you talk to somebody, we say, we need to be speaking the same language. Because if you're not speaking, you don't feel like you're being understood. You don't feel like you're being heard. And that's why we know the famous thing that the people of the Sanhedrin, they knew the 70 languages. That's what it says, Mordechai, right? He knew all the languages. Because you have to be able to hear the person in their own language. And we know that now, this is a big thing with social media, how even just writing something down can become the cause of such misunderstandings because we speak our own language in that sense, and it's not clear. The communication is very unclear, and that can cause tremendous problems. That's another fascinating thing. And then he says also, beautiful also, when the judge, it's such an interesting thing, when the judge is judging, it says he has to lift up his eyes and look at each one in the same way. What does that mean, in the same way? First of all, obviously treating them the same, but also, one shouldn't sit on a lower chair and one on a higher chair. The judge should be equal level to both of them and share his gaze to both of them as much as possible in the same amount. Because we know, first of all, if somebody feels, even if they're interpreting it wrong, but if somebody feels that the judge is giving more attention to one, they might already give up, right? Then they might feel less than. They might feel that they've already lost the case before they began. Also, if somebody feels that the judge is looking down at them, because if you're looking in a certain way down, that also can cause the person to be less confident. And all of these things are so important. And the Aruch Chaim says, such a cute thing, he shares like an anecdote, a personal. He says he had, and he describes him, a very good friend, somebody that was very beloved to me and that I respected very much. This person, I don't know his name, is, it says, Moshe Berdigo. Whatever he must. The Aruch Chaim lived in Morocco and then moved to Jerusalem in the late 1600s. So I don't know which place this Reb Moshe Berdigo lived, but he was a person that the Aruch Chaim knew. And he says that what he would do is, this person, when he would judge, he would never look up at all. He looked down. He didn't even look at the two litigants. He would just listen to what they both had to say. Why? Because he said he thinks it's impossible that he's going to look at them the same. So this way, one cannot feel that he's looking more at him or less than him, but he looked down the entire time, and he never lifted up his eyes even once. Fascinating thing. And then also he says, a beautiful thing also when it says Bein Ishu Bein Achiv, between one man and his brother. What does that mean, one man and his brother? Usually the litigations, hopefully, are not between men and their brother. But of course, the Jewish nation are called brothers. But the idea being that a person should never say, if taka two brothers come, what do I have to worry? They're brothers anyway. What does that mean? That means when two people come, even if they're good friends, or even if the case is not such a, you know, massive one, treat it with incredible, like, sanctity, almost like, this is so important that I have to listen to every single detail and apply my entire intelligence to judge this properly. Then he says one more thing here. Let's see. Oh, another interesting thing when we talk about treating them as equal importance, and I don't know who would do this, maybe there was a secretary, but if two litigants come and one is dressed beautifully and one is dressed in shmatis, it's a problem. So I don't know what they would do about it. Perhaps they would put on shmatis on both, I'm not sure, but the point is you cannot have that because it's, as we said, it's not possible that the judge will not be influenced unless the taka doesn't look at them. But that's not the usual. So again, fascinating thing for us, a beautiful lesson. When we look at, of course, we're talking about judging ourselves more than judging others, but nevertheless, when we look at our relationships, we have to be very, very careful to look deeper, as we say, and to know that if somebody is dressed in shmatis, and that can be in any way, we're not talking about just physically, if somebody doesn't look the way we feel is appropriate, we have to know in ourselves that we are going to be looking at them differently, so we should check ourselves. We have to be extra careful how we're relating to them, that is influencing us. That's, we have to be aware. It's a very important thing. And the other thing, the last thing that he mentions over here is, as we said, one can't be sitting, one can't be standing. Never mind sitting on different levels. They have to both be sitting or both be standing, because otherwise, inevitably, they will be judged differently. Fascinating thing. Then
I just think that when you put these trials on TV, you know, these really gross, terrible, murderers, and they're on trial, and their lawyer is going in front of the judge, so his lawyer will dress him up in a suit.
I know. It's interesting, even though they never looked like that ever. I know. So it's true. Because it influences. It's a fact. It just... Yeah, even though we say not. It's just... That's...
The judgment of what you see is automatic.
It's incredible.
It's such self-control to actually pull away from it.
That's an amazing point. Exactly. You have to, it's mamish. I know. And that's what's challenging. But see, Torah does tell us that we should, I think being aware helps a little bit. And sometimes it's the initial, and then you can stop and think a little bit, so you can. But that also applies to ourselves. You know, that it's a very interesting thing, because we have to also pull away a little bit from ourselves, which is a very, even more challenging sometimes. And realize perhaps two things, but this can go in both ways. We have to realize how we have been, so to speak, dressed, I mean, like, we have taken on a certain form because of our circumstances, so don't judge ourselves so harshly sometimes. And on the flip side also, perhaps we can say we've allowed ourselves to be caught in this certain way, and then, so we have to be a little bit outside of ourselves and look at ourselves in that way. So it's true, but for sure for others, there's no question. You immediately become, okay, I'm not going to do number five. I'm going to show you something else. One last thing before time is up. Because we discussed, let's come back to that original thing about the gates. So I just want to tell you something beautiful. On the last page, we'll do the other, on page five, to show you something nice. Oh, and next time we'll do something else beautiful from a clip. I'm not going to miss number four. But number five, page number five, I want to show you something beautiful. He says like this, what does this mean that we said the eyes, the ears? Okay, so he goes very specific here. Taken from a mimer, very, very specific lessons. So, first of all, as we talked about sight, so he says a person has to be careful what they see. But he says something interesting, that a person should never say, and this is fascinating because sometimes we do, we overestimate ourselves, sometimes we underestimate, but sometimes we overestimate and we say, it doesn't matter that I saw it, it's not going to affect me. Or sometimes we say, I'm beyond that. Or we say, I've become so numb to it. You know, we've seen it so many times. We have to know that whatever we see, it doesn't matter what it is, it will affect us, subconsciously or consciously. And we don't know when that's going to come up again. So nowadays it's so hard because we are so bombarded, as we know. This is the problem in the war now, as we know. This is what's changed with all the images. No matter what they're... And you know, we see it so clearly. You know, they show this image, the starving baby. Everybody's screaming and shouting. No matter how many times people will explain, perhaps that it's not even true or that it's not now, it doesn't matter. Once they've seen it, it's finished. That's what they feel, and it's over. So what you see affects you no matter what. That's the first thing. He says, then when it comes to, as he says, the hearing. So with hearing, we know this famous thing. The most important thing with hearing, as we know, is not to listen to Lashon Hara. But with Lashon Hara, we have an interesting thing. So what's Lashon Hara? Is anything negative somebody's going to say about somebody else. So we have a fascinating thing with Lashon Hara. We say that Lashon Hara, famous thing, kills three people, right? What's the three people that it kills? So we say it kills the one we're speaking about. Obviously, the one who is speaking is also killing himself. In a sense, he's damaging himself. He's lowering himself. And interestingly enough, the one who's listening is also being killed. So we say, why? It wasn't my choice. I didn't know what he was going to say. So as we say, like it or not, it affects you. A, it's going to affect the way you view the other person. Now, there's no question about it. But even more than that, it desensitizes us. When we hear something about somebody, right, something negative, and you hear this person did this or this person looks like this, no matter what, we don't even realize how what happens is things become normalized. Oh, this is what people do. It becomes normalized. Our whole view of everything changes. In a sense, the perception of things changes. It slowly, 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 the effect is tremendous. So we have to be so careful to what we listen. That's what he says. So listening is an incredible, the ears are a very big gate that we have to make sure. And also we all know that when we listen to Lashon Hara, unfortunately, it has a negative effect on the person who's being spoken about. And therefore, we are actively causing something negative to happen to somebody else. Then we come to, we said, the nose. So the nose is a fascinating one. So in the Maamar it explains, what is the nose referring to? The smell? The smell is when we want some. It's the temptation. Because it's very interesting, you know, if you walk into a house and you smell something baking, right? So that smell, or the bakery, that's what, you know, pulls people in. The smell is, in a sense, almost that yearning. And then you haven't yet eaten it, but you're waiting to, right? It's like that anticipation of that. And sometimes it's a good thing, but it can also be in a negative thing. So the smell represents when you are anticipating doing something wrong, which most of us say, no, we don't do that. But, you know, whether it be, and this could be an interesting one, with the speaking of Lashon Hara, sometimes you hear something and it's like a juicy piece of gossip and you just can't wait to share it. I mean, I hope not. But let's say to somebody who's close to you or whatever it may be. It's not even gossip. But, you know, if you just have that anticipation. The anticipation of the negative is also a very negative thing, and that's what we have to make sure to guard the nose in that way. And of course, the mouth is an interesting one. So he says with the mouth over here, that's a bit different. So the mouth could be just what you take into your mouth, but let's put that aside. It's what you're going to say. So saying is what you're giving out, right? So he says a fascinating thing. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, you know, there's a famous Mishnah that says, Rabbi Gamliel says, I grew up amongst the wise people and I haven't found any greater wisdom than silence. He says, silence. The golden silence. So many times, what does that mean? Silence, silence. Shouldn't we be talking and communicating? He says, no, 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 no. So he says, it's such a beautiful thing. He's like this, that if you think about the way Hashem created us, He gave us two ears, He gave us two eyes, but He only gave us one mouth. Why? Because you should listen double and speak half. Our words should be much less than what we listen. Listening is an incredibly, when we're listening to good, in other words, to somebody else sharing, somebody else, whatever it may be, somebody else telling us what they need, or whatever it may be, we're listening to words of wisdom, of Torah, of uplifting, of music, inspiration, whatever it may be. But speaking, that we have to be counted and measured. And it's a beautiful thing. I saw a very cute thing. One person, I forgot who it was, if it was the Vilna Gaon, somebody says, you know, Hashem, He wishes Hashem would have given us two mouths. Why? Because one mouth we could have spoken the good, and one mouth for the negative or for the mundane things. But then he said, no, thank God Hashem didn't. Because imagine how much Lashon Hara we would speak if we had two mouths. One mouth is enough that we have to control. It's hard enough. That's the hardest one to put the judge in front of. But it's not, what, the teeth, to stop yourself, huh? But the truth is, it's not just Lashon Hara. Because when we talk about speech, we know there's many, many things with speech. So they categorize it in different ways. But one of the main things we know is that there's negative speech, curses that people, you know, how do you say it? Like profane language, all that. Okay, so we know that's bad. Okay, no, that's no question. And then there's also speech that could be good and could be bad, which means when we say something about somebody else, even if when we mean it well, but then somebody could take it the wrong way, that's could be negative, it could be positive. There's also the domain of speech, which is pariv. I don't know, what color are you painting your wall? Or what are you cooking for supper? Or as we say, the weather. You know, that's the power of speech. And then there's one category of speech, that's the positive speech. So that could involve, as we say, whether it be davening and learning, or speaking to somebody in a way where you're lifting them, right? So speaking for a mitzvah, whatever it may be. Encouraging a person, finding out what a person needs, all this kind of thing. So obviously that category of speech is the one that we are meant to be engaging in. The other categories of speech, including the parav ones, are where we're meant to be, well, some we're not at all, and the parav ones is where we're meant to be limiting. But it's a fascinating thing that even in the Divrei Torah, it's interesting because he said that I sat amongst the wise people and I found the best thing was silence. Why? Because a person who is truly wise and is somebody who is humble and knows that they have so much to learn. When we are listening, we are learning. When we are speaking, we're not learning. We're just giving out what we know. So a person who listens much more will accumulate so much more understanding, so much more depth, so much become so much more of a human being, of a special person, as we say. And we are called communicators. That's what makes us special. But they will, when they speak, their speech will be worthwhile if you listen much more. So especially initially, when you're starting out, and initially it doesn't mean when we're just children, in any field that we know that somebody else knows more than us, or that there's so much more to learn, which is in most fields, we listen more and we speak less. And this is what we're saying here. So these are the gates that we have to put the judges in front of. And as we said with the judgment, be careful with the judgment. Judge properly. But one of the big things is, as we say, remember there's shoftim and there's shoitrim. This is interesting. There's judges and there's policemen. So what's the policeman? The truth is, it says that when Mashiach will come, we won't need policemen. So if we judge properly, then we will listen to our judgment. So the best case scenario is when a person is selective and a person is aware, as we're saying, and a person is constantly living, how do you say, with, in a sense, intentional, then they don't just coast through and they don't just say what they think, see what they think, hear what they think, like just, you know, so to speak, superficial, rather with intention. Then what ends up happening is you do put judges in front of your gates, and then it says, V'hoya machanecha kadesh, then you're, everything that you are guarding will remain holy. So you will remain holy. You will remain wise. You will be a person who is connected to other people properly and to God. And that's the only way. So it's a beautiful idea. Starting out the whole Chumash, this is what we're meant to do. So it's a good week to concentrate on our judgment, our judges for ourselves, as we say. But Emir Hashem, Hashem should give us the strength to be able to, yeah, to know, as we know, to judge correctly. You said.
Oy vey,
yeah.
Now, that was towards the Christians, because that is mother and child.
Right, right.
And that's why all the countries all over the sudden, all the Catholic countries,
Interesting.
Because that's what it reminds them of.
But you see, it's interesting.